Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day. Thanks so much. Rick Bucher, NBA insider, Fox Sports 1 and Bleacher Report. He'll join us in 15 minutes, get his thoughts on last night's two unbelievable games. Unbelievable games. You know where you lose me? You know, and I do on some level understand. I'm not lost on the understanding that you grow tired of politics and the intersection of them in sports. Like I get it. I understand it. Okay. And earlier I said what Stephen A. Smith said earlier today on First Take was that Steve Nashkin hired as head coach of the Brooklyn Nets is white privilege. Like it's laughable. It's laughable. Right? I think there is, most of us live, I believe, in the middle ground of the real world. And the middle ground, you can sit there and go, look, there's treatment of black people which is wrong. By the way, there's treatment of Hispanic people that's been wrong. There's treatment of Asians that have been wrong. There's treatment of mixed race people, light skinned black people, dark skinned Mexican people that are wrong by light skinned Mexican people. Like there's treatment that has been wrong, but every hire, every bad action, even bad actor, if you will, is the expression of white person versus black doesn't mean they're automatically racist or that race even plays a factor. And every hiring of a white person instead of a black person does not mean that race played a factor. And Steve Nash falls right into that. So I understand how you would grow tired of it. I do. But if you want to tell me, you sit here and go like, I'm not watching basketball because it's too political. Like, okay. I grow tired of political discussions and debates and whatever. Those are two great basketball games or two really close and competitive basketball games. And I don't think outside of kind of denouncing or laughing at Stephen A's assessment of white privilege with Steve Nash being hired, the discussion of the games and the players and the motivations and whatever, nothing to do with the race. It's funny because when I have said this about Lamar Jackson, right, and anytime anyone has said this about Lamar Jackson, again, this is what we do. When you say something about a black quarterback, it suddenly becomes about race. You say it about a white quarterback, and it's about how crummy the quarterback. Like, I was alive and on national radio when Tim Tebow was a starting quarterback, and I said, and we can pull any tape you'd like from both the previous two networks I pulled, like, it ain't going to last. That dude can't throw. And analyst after analyst, like, he might want to think about switching positions. So Lamar Jackson's coming out. He's the fastest quarterback I think any of us have ever seen. And yeah, he won the Heisman Trophy, but he was wildly at times inaccurate, short and underneath stuff. And one position coach said, are you going to run with the wide receivers? Well, that's racist. No, it's not. No, it's not. Eric Crouch was asked to switch positions. Happened before. Great college quarterback. Tim Tebow, they talked about switching positions. Happened before. Great college quarterback. And oh yeah, by the way, no one said, are you going to play wide receiver? Which, by the way, he lined up and played wide receiver as a rookie for the Ravens. Oh, no, Doug. He wasn't playing wide receiver. He was split out wide as a second quarterback. Oh, okay. We're good then. But all I've said about Lamar Jackson is, like, look, end of the day, First and 10, 80 yards to go, down 6 points. Can you throw the football accurately enough, well enough, outside the numbers to win a game? Right? And he is, and you can say, well, he's not a running quarterback. Well, he runs more than any quarterback in the modern history of football. He's run the football more since he's become a starter than any quarterback in the history of the NFL. And what do all those guys have in common? They all get hurt. Because in the NFL, you don't get faster. Everybody else does. Sometimes you don't even need a contact injury. Sometimes just a, you know, I mean, look at the crummy field in D.C. and what happened to RG3. Vince Young, I think some of his personal stuff imploded him, but he was a Pro Bowler as a rookie, and he faded. Steve Young, who was a running quarterback, who could throw, became a Hall of Famer. Like, look, he struggled early in his career, then went to the USFL, then came back and backed up. And I know he played late into his 30s, but it was an injury-mired career because he got so beat up. I mean, Deshaun Watson, who's a tremendous quarterback. He tore his ACL in the NFL. He tore his ACL in college. And it's changed how much he can throw. So while many predicted, and I would consider myself included, that the league eventually would catch up to Lamar Jackson. They obviously did not last year. We'll see this year. He also got better. Let's give credit where it's due. They also put a great team around him with bigger targets and Hollywood Brown, who could take the top off the defense. Like, they created kind of the perfect scenario for him to succeed offensively and had the perfect offensive coordinator in Greg Roman. But when you get to the playoffs, you got to throw the football. You just do. Because at some point, you're going to get behind. I mean, the Chiefs trailed in all three playoff games by big numbers, 24-0 at home to the Texans. In the Super Bowl, they were being dominated. At that point in time, you got to, hey, listen, we don't want to go away from our game plan, but we got to change it some and start throwing the football. Last night I watched Giannis, and I believe this comparison was made. I believe it was made by Colin Cowherd like a week or a week and a half ago. They're the same guy. They're physically imposing and dominant in the regular season. Lamar Jackson was dominant in the regular season. What happens in the postseason? Well, the year before, the LA Chargers put 7 defensive backs out there and said, hey, we're just going to corral you and make you throw the football and beat us. And he couldn't. At home against a wild card team, couldn't do it. And then this year, what happened? You know, also when you run the football, you can fumble the ball. His turnovers are a problem. His accuracy is a problem. The ability to move the ball, they get behind and they can't come back. That's what happened. Playoffs are, it's like a different sport than the regular season. And now we watch Giannis and the things he get away with defensively. Now he gets called for a foul. The things he get away with are offensively. He gets called for a foul, like just bully ball over guys. David Thorpe joined us 20 minutes ago. Okay. Dude's been in basketball his entire life. And when he said it's completely accurate. Like, look, he doesn't have to be a great three-point shooter. By the way, he shot the ball well from three in the bubble in the regular season. Once you get to the playoffs, though, like, you got to have a go-to. You got to be able to step in and knock down a jump shot. You will not get to that rim with consistency, even when they put 4 other guys outside the three-point line. They will make you prove your weakness is a strength, or your weakness will undo you. Open for a reason, right? That's Lou Dort last night. That's Giannis in this series. That's Lamar Jackson in the playoffs. It doesn't mean that they're not super talented, and it doesn't mean, especially Lamar, who's only played 2 years in the NFL, like he can. And look at the leaps and bounds he improved from season 1 to season 2. Giannis, he's been doing it a little bit longer. And there's just some flaws in how big he is, how long he is, to what he can tighten up. And it's hard to be, you know, I don't know if he'd become a natural shooter, but look, Jason Kidd went from ace and kid, could not make a jump shot, to when Jason Kidd retired, people know this, he was actually 8th all time in 3-pointers made in NBA history. You know, he was from a non-shooter to a guy who could make a set shot three. Michael Jordan improved over time. Hell, Brooke Lopez is his teammate. He didn't shoot a three. Didn't make a three like his first 8 years in the NBA. You know, now he's become a viable weapon from three. So you can get there. But the point is the playoffs, if you don't have that one thing it takes to win big against better competition. And the NBA, it's about a consistent jump shot. It's about a consistent jump shot. I mean, like, look, LeBron James, at times against the Spurs, they would dare him to shoot that mid-range shot, and he would have a crisis in confidence at times. It's really that simple. You know, Lamar Jackson, like these, he has to be a more accurate and competent passer. He's very good when they're on time, on target, with the lead, running the football. You know, they try and get him to third and manageable, and then he's still a run passer. You get to third and seven plus, or third in California, and you got to drop back there like Dan Marino and go through your progressions, like, yeah, it's a little tougher. Heck, there's a little Peyton Manning to him. Right? Like, look, Peyton Manning, when everything is going as planned, people forget this. This is the discussion that has been lost in the Tom Brady is the GOAT thing. When Peyton Manning retired, there were many people who know and evaluate the quarterback position like, Peyton Manning's the greatest quarterback ever. I didn't agree with it. But that is what quarterback be like. If you're going to play quarterback, if you want to be a great quarterback in the NFL, the number one tape you want to throw on is Peyton Manning. But, you know, now because Brady's won six and Aaron Rodgers probably has a better skill set, like, that's the discussion. Then there's Joe Montana. But Peyton Manning, but look, the truth is Peyton Manning's basically a 500 quarterback in the playoffs. Why? Because in the playoffs, things don't go as planned. Like, the way I visualize Peyton Manning is, if, like, he's one of those guys that if he has his coffee the same time every day and relieves himself at the same time and has his meeting the same time and works out the same time and does work the same time and meets his kids, like, he's one of those program guys. Hey, great. But what happens when the Starbucks that he normally goes to is closed? And suddenly, or his car breaks down, or the internet is down, right? Or his assistant calls in sick, okay? Like, one thing goes wrong, and all of a sudden, he's just not as good. Whereas, again, not discussed anymore, when Brett Favre retired, you could easily make the case that Brett Favre is the greatest quarterback ever, or at least in the conversation. He's got the Lou Gehrig record for most consecutive games started, right? Won a couple Super Bowls, MVPs. One Super Bowl, excuse me. MVP. I think three MVPs, right? Records galore. Did it in Green Bay, surrounded by marginal talent at best. Heck, even when he went to New York, people forget, before he got hurt and he played hurt with like a torn bicep, they were 9-3. Then they go into, and he goes to Minnesota. The arch rival of the Packers comes and beats the Packers in Green Bay, goes to the NFC Championship game. Loses to the Saints, but they win that game. He gets back, it's like, look, Brett Favre's an all-time great. Brett Favre was better in the playoffs than Peyton Manning. Why? Because Brett Favre didn't need a script. Just give me the ball. Get open, and I'll get it to you. If not, I'll run, or I'll run over a couple guys, and I'll throw it, you know, into double or triple coverage, and somehow we'll hope it works out. Why? Because he's a dude who functioned well in chaos and just figured it out. Peyton Manning wasn't. Peyton Manning, everything had to be in order. Everything is in order for Lamar Jackson. You start getting downhill, whereas Pat Mahomes... We go off script, we get behind, okay, snap me the ball, get open, I'll figure it out. That's the difference. And in the playoffs, that's the difference. Plays don't matter. They just don't. Get out of my way, I'm going to go make a shot. And if somebody comes and helps, I'm going to get them the open shot, and they're going to knock it down. And you look at Giannis, when things are going, when they're playing with a lead and he's playing downhill and he's getting to the rim and they're helping out, he's kicking out for three-point shot, it's great. They start missing some shots and the team starts building the wall defensively and he can't get in and is like daring him to just go ahead and shoot the jump shot. That ain't what he does. The great orator Mike Tyson said it best. Everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face. See what the Bucks' plan is. All right, coming up next, Rick Bucher is going to join us. We'll get to his thoughts. Did Houston postpone the inevitable? How much trouble are the Bucks in? What about the Raptors now, down two games none? This is, without question, a must-win tonight. And Clippers and Lakers seem destined to meet each other because the teams they're matching up are absolute guests. Plus, the story of the day is Steve Nash is the new head coach of the Brooklyn Nets. Basketball team, not soccer team. Who would have thought he'd coach soccer? That's a wow. We'll get Rick Bucher's thoughts upcoming next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb for Colin. This is The Herd. Got Ryan Music upcoming with the news shortly. There is a lot of news in the world of sports. A lot. Josh Gordon, not yet back in the league, but has signed with an NFL team. We'll get more on that upcoming. But let's react to an amazing night in the NBA. We have more games today. Like, I mean, Jamal Murray, Rick Bucher joins us, NBA insider, Fox Sports 1, Bleacher Report. I thought Jamal Murray's reaction after winning Game 7 to Scott Van Pelt, good friend of both of ours, says it all, right? Wait, we play Thursday? Like, I don't know how they have the gas in the tank to legitimately compete, at least in the early part of the series. And then even then, like, you just the idea of recovering when you're already exhausted and you've been in this bubble, that kind of jumps out to me about that particular game tonight. Buke, you with me?
Yeah.
Okay. Does it jump out to you? I mean, that these guys, I can't imagine what they have in the tank.
No, I mean, the one benefit is you're not traveling. So you're not jumping on a plane. You get out of the arena and you get back to your hotel. And so there is the lack of the exhaustion from travel, but just emotionally, I can't imagine. And then it's just prepping for a completely different type team. I don't know that I gave the Nuggets under any circumstances. You could give them 4 days of rest, and I don't know that I would see them as being a threat to knock off the Clippers. But that said, I'm not anticipating. I'm really not anticipating anything special as a result of this.
Rick Bucher joining us. Let's get to last night. I think we start with the Rockets game. Should we be more impressed with Oklahoma City finding a way to cobble it together and get to Game 7, or should we react to Houston kind of postponing the inevitable, a flawed team whose flaws were exposed and they still kind of survived?
Yeah, look, there was so much pressure on Houston to try to overcome, but I felt as if Houston basically said they asked Oklahoma City to win the game, and the Thunder just refused. No, we're not going. We don't want this. It just wasn't playoff basketball. It was a comedy of errors down the stretch. There was nothing. It was a survival when it came to Game 7. So it doesn't feel me. It was disappointing to watch on both ends. Whoever was going to come out of it didn't make me feel as if they were going to be prepared to put up any sort of a fight against the Lakers. I honestly don't expect the second round to be anything or nearly as exciting as we saw in the first round. I would expect that both of these series are going to be over in pretty perfunctory fashion.
How can Steven Adams not even look at scoring the basketball? Like, I just, There are so many possessions in which you're just like, look, dude, if you just slip to the rim and they throw it to the rim, you catch it and dunk the basketball. How does he lack that much offensive skill? And it doesn't even take a lot of skill. It's just like the wherewithal to, I'm a foot taller than everybody guarding me and they're barely even guarding me.
Yeah. Well, I just wonder how much of it is Steven Adams' mindset and how much of it is the way that they've decided that they want to play. And when you've played a certain way all year and there's certain things that you look for, I mean, it's like the inbounds pass at the end of the game. I mean, say Gilgeous also didn't recognize that he had P.J. Tucker on his back and had an easy opportunity to score. So it to me was mind-boggling, the lack of recognition on so many fronts. And I can only attribute it to, you're so used to playing a certain way, looking for a certain thing. But the execution, again, that's where it's hard for me to give the Rockets too much credit, because I just thought that the Thunder's execution down the stretch was atrocious.
It was atrocious. All right, let's get to the let me stick with Houston. Any chance they look at the possibility of moving Harden in the offseason?
No, I wouldn't expect that they would move Harden. I would expect that they would move Westbrook before they moved Harden. And is there the possibility of that? Honestly, I think there is, just because of the financial situation that they're facing and that the league is facing. But that's the real unknown. I talked to an owner the other day because I was really curious whether there was going to be a push to blow up the CBA and negotiate a new one. And he didn't go so far as that. And I actually talked to a couple owners about that. It's not as if that's on the top of their agenda. At least they're not letting, they didn't let me know that it was. But the bump what I was told is the bump that the salary cap got that allowed the Golden State Warriors to sign Kevin Durant as a free agent, anticipate the cap going down as much as that went up. And the ramifications of that is going to be incredibly severe. And I think the only way they get around that, short of negotiating a new collective bargaining agreement, is for the players' union to agree to kind of smooth out the huge deficit that is coming. But it certainly is, and you know, based on sort of the indications of where Tillman Fertitta is and the losses that he suffered outside of the team, I've been told more than once, there's, you know, don't be surprised if they're looking to move one of their salaries, but I would expect it would be Russell Westbrook before it would be James Harden.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about the I think we all operate under this assumption that this is the only thing that these teams have. Now, the Lakers, like, that's a family-owned shop. They're obviously losing a ton of money. You know, they do have some, at least, content on Spectrum Sportsnet, which is part of their contract, so they'll be able to kind of make do. But like you said, Tillman Fertitta is a restaurateur, right? And, I mean, you go through all the restaurants they own, and that business is just being crushed nationally. We all operate as if there's just unlimited sums of money coming in. Don't worry, these owners have, they're billionaires. They got unlimited sums of money. He overpaid for the team. He's overpaying in terms of salaries, and his primary source of income is being decimated by the pandemic. And we don't think there's going to be adjustment. Of course there. And oh yeah, by the way, they're not winning.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a combination of things, and next season doesn't offer a whole lot of relief. I think it's why Adam Silver has talked about pushing the start of the season back from December to January or later, because it's essentially, I think that Adam in the league is looking at it and saying, if we get a vaccine by, you know, this January, maybe we can open up and we can have fans. But if they're not able to have fans, if they're not able to sell season tickets for next season, that is going to have a huge crush on their revenue overall and on the salary cap structure.
Rick Bucher joining us. What's wrong with the Bucks?
I don't know that there's anything wrong with them other than Giannis doesn't have the kind of game necessary to lead a team in the postseason. And so now you're leaning on Chris Middleton. And for whatever reason, their defensive acuity that we saw during the regular season was lost over the break. They simply just are not playing at the same level defensively, particularly when it comes to closing out on the perimeter. And I can't explain why that is, but honestly, I think you and I, Doug, are on the same page here. It has long been my issue with people who have labeled Giannis as this superstar or the best player in the game or even MVP is that his game's not fully formed. He's a dynamic, talented player. By analytics, you can make a case, but if you understand the game, you realize that he is, you know, I saw some of the debate, you know, Scottie Pippen suggesting that he's a Robin. I think he has the mentality of a Batman. I don't think he's afraid of the moment. I just don't think he has the skill set yet or the game that allows him to be that.
I completely agree with you. Completely agree. I kind of started the hour saying it's a lot like Lamar Jackson where there's a lot to like there, but he's just not refined enough in terms of throwing the football third and, you know, 7+, 8+ to win a championship, to win the playoffs. And it's the same with Giannis. It's David Thorpe joined us earlier. He's like, look, it's not even about the three-pointers. Like, he can't consistently make an 18-footer that the best NBA players always make to keep that defense honest.
Well, then that's more important than everybody's been focusing on. He's got to have a three-point shot. And then if he does, he's going to be unstoppable. It's like, no, not the way that team functions. If you want to play through him in half-court sets, I'm not putting him above the arc. I'm putting him below the free throw line where he can operate on a step back or a mid-range jumper or face up or get to his Euro step, go either direction. Now he becomes an unstoppable force that if you have to crowd him to defend him, now you have three-point shooters around him. If you put him out at the three-point arc, now he still becomes more limited and can't be your playmaker from there that he can be working below the free throw line. It's the same as if people want to understand what he has to develop, it's Kevin Durant's game the last time we saw him with the Golden State Warriors, which is catch it below the free throw line. Can you take one dribble and pull up and hit a shot? If he has the same size and length, he could be very much KD, but he does not have that element in his game.
Yeah, this is a longer discussion. Maybe we'll have it on the pod. Rick Bucher joining us from Bleach Report. Okay, so let's get to the Toronto Raptors. Everybody likes the Raptors. Raptors are cute, cuddly. Oh, man, Nick Nurse, Coach of the Year. Look what he did without Kawhi. Now they're down 2-0. How fixable are their issues against the Celtics?
This is a tough one for me because I've been on the Raptors bandwagon all year. And watching them in the bubble against Boston during the regular eight games, I saw the matchups and I was like, ooh, this might be a problem. But you know what? The Raptors' experience and their ability to execute in the clutch is going to be the difference maker. And then we got game two, and that's exactly the kind of game that I thought the Raptors would be able to win against the Celtics, and they weren't. And it was largely because with the matchups as they are against Boston, they look to Pascal Siakam to be that guy, and he's not there yet. That just became painfully apparent to me. I thought, okay, if he's not, there's other options you can go to. But because of the size and length difference, Kyle Lowry, Fred VanVleet, very difficult. So, man, after watching game two, I don't know, Doug. I'm open to ideas because I would like to think that the Raptors can still make this a series and could still potentially win it. But from what I've seen to this point, the things that I thought would carry them are not there.
Rick Bucher joining us. Bucher, you live in Northern California. I know you're close with a lot of the Warriors guys. Steve Nash spent some time there as a consultant. What's your reaction to him being named the new head coach of the Brooklyn Nets?
I thought it was a brilliant, inspired pick. I don't think that there's a person out there that they could have hired that, you know, outside of a coach with a championship ring that could have gone into Brooklyn and immediately held the respect of KD and Kyrie. That previous relationship with KD, Steve obviously was a consultant with the Warriors and has spent time with him. I know that Kyrie respects him just as a point guard and a league MVP. Look, he needs a strong staff. I think he's very fortunate that Jacque Vaughn agreed to stay on as an assistant coach. But I see this a lot as with Larry Bird when he went into Indiana and coached Reggie Miller and Mark Jackson and a disparate group of quietly some big personalities there and was able to coach them to the finals. There's big expectations. Nash is a communicator, his IQ. I don't think they could have done better. We'll see if it works because there's still a lot of questions.
Sure.
And the expectations are high.
No, nobody knows what KD's going to look like when he comes out of this. He's going to have missed more time with the Achilles tendon than anybody has ever missed with the Achilles tendon.
For sure. So there's a lot of questions there. And then just, you know, making it work between KD and Kyrie and what do you do with Caris LeVert? And can you maintain a sort of, you know, the camaraderie that was, I thought, lost this past year that made them good last year? But if you're going to bring a guy in there who has the personality and the credentials, I mean, honestly, you know, people were talking about Greg Popovich going there. I don't know that was ever a realistic possibility. But I'm not even sure at this point in Pop's career with these guys that it would have worked, that I'd have more confidence in it working than with Nash. I don't know if it's going to work, but I like the idea that Sean Marks is going with.
I don't know if I like the idea. I get it. And they apparently have a great relationship. And so much of – tell me if this is a wrong statement. The NBA is about relationships and respect, right? You got to have relationships with the people you work with and work for, and you got to have the respect of the locker room. And I think that's why it makes sense to me. I don't know if it'll work because I don't know. I don't know if Kyrie works as a championship team anywhere, and I don't know what KD is going to look like when he comes off this injury.
Agreed with all that. The relationships and the ability to manage people.
Yep.
Are the first two things you need. But then the third is you have to be able to make guys better and convince them that your way works. And if you get that, now you got the triumvirate. If you don't, then the first two eventually wear out.
Buke, great stuff. Look forward to reading some in Bleacher Report and seeing you on Fox Sports 1. Appreciate you being our guest.
You got it, Doug.
Let's get to Ryan Music with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
All right, Doug. You mentioned it earlier. Josh Gordon back with the team, but not necessarily back in the NFL. He has signed a new one-year contract with the Seattle Seahawks, but still awaiting official reinstatement into the NFL.
Well, so Antonio Brown's not ready until midseason, right? And some people thought Antonio Brown would fit there. But again, relationships. Josh Gordon was there previously, so he knows kind of the deal. I think you could take one of two troubled wide receivers, and for them to take Josh Gordon instead of Antonio Brown does not bode well for Antonio Brown.
And another NFL wide receiver news, the Patriots cut wide receiver Mohamed Sanu very shortly after last season, acquiring him mid-year in a trade from the Atlanta Falcons.
Yep.
And that Patriots stint didn't last very long.
No, I mean, remember, they gave up, I think, a second-round pick to get Muhammad Sanu, whereas the Broncos only got a third-round pick for Emmanuel Sanders. But I don't know if the Broncos would have traded him, you know, to the Patriots in the AFC. But obviously, the Niners made a better choice in who they traded for. But there are two things you can count on, right? Two things you can count on. Maybe more than that. Sunrise in the East and set in the West. And as good as the Patriots are at evaluating seemingly every position, wide receiver is not one of them. And that's Ryan Music with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
Last night was messy in the NBA. Messy. We'll try and clean up that mess next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb for Colin. This is The Herd. Thanks so much for joining us. Joel Klatt's going to join us next hour. Joel Klatt definitely going to join us. Man, you were talking about the swings and the sways of like, yes, 2 days ago, apparently, you know, the president called the commissioner of the Big Ten. People were like, man, the president's like, they're on the 1 yard, the 1 yard line. I pointed out there's 2 1-yard lines on a football field. And apparently, maybe the other one. There's a new report out of Penn State that 30 to 35% of athletes who contract COVID contract myocarditis. That, of course, would put the brakes on the Big Ten, believing they could play college football. We'll get Joe Klatt knows a lot more about what's going on. I don't even know if he can say all that he knows, but he generally has a lot of strong opinions, and he's great at what he does, covering college football for Fox Sports. He'll join us 15 past next hour. And then, I love you. Ryan Music is my producer on the Doug Gottlieb Show, follows this show on Fox Sports Radio. Love him to death. Okay, but we decided our best for last, and he was like, so our best for last, because Steve Nash is now the new head coach in the Brooklyn Nets, and because we saw Russell Westbrook, who's an MVP, average triple-double, and we saw Chris Paul lose, although play really, really well in the series, and lift his team up. Hey, why not do the top 10 point guards of all time? Ryan was giving me names. I was like, I love you, but I'm good on this one. I'm good on this one. That's me telling Ryan, hey, let's talk volleyball players. I'm going to give you a list of great. He was a volleyball player in college. A list of great volleyball players of all time. He was like, yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Anyway, last night was messy, just messy. You know, I mean, actually, the night before was super messy too with Denver. Like it was like one of those bad viral videos of dudes turning the ball over, missing. Torrey Craig misses a dead layup to win the game, and then Mike Conley gets another three in and out, which is messy. And then with the fouls called at the end of the Bucks Heat game, can we just admit something? Okay, Reggie Miller was a great player. Okay. I don't believe Reggie Miller, truthfully, had he not done what he did to the New York Knicks, I don't think he would be in the Hall of Fame. And you're like, how could you say that? That's sacrilege. You don't like Reggie. No. I was actually a ball boy for Reggie Miller when he played at UCLA. But Reggie Miller was all NBA third team 3 times. That's it. He was never first or second team all NBA. In other words, he was not believed to be one of the top 10 players in the NBA at any point in time in his career, yet he's in the Hall of Fame. And it's really because of, I mean, he was consistent, he was with one team, and what he did to the Knicks was remarkable. But he also ruined the NBA. Ruined the NBA! Kicking out his legs. Now, the truth is that this move was first started by a guy named Lloyd Free. Do you guys know what Lloyd Free's nickname was? World Be Free. Changed his name legally to World Be Free. And now World Be Free, he didn't necessarily change his name because he wanted world peace. He changed his name because Lloyd Free believed he was all world. That's the true story. But Lloyd Free used to kick out his legs to draw a foul on jump shots. Of course, 3-point jump shots were the specialty of not only Lloyd Free, but also Reggie Miller. Reggie Miller, in essentially, either, I don't know if he invented the move. It's a lot like Kobe Bryant kind of stealing the nickname Mamba from a kid, right? That's what happened. Reggie Miller took this move from Lloyd Free and popularized it, and it's become the Reggie Miller move. It's ruined basketball. It is unwatchable to watch guys shoot threes and then fall down anytime anyone's near them. And no, I don't think either was a foul. Yes, makeup calls do take place. That felt like a makeup call. Miami was going to win. Then there's a foul on the three-point shot. That wasn't really a foul. So they call a foul on a three-point shot. That wasn't really a foul. Jimmy Butler wins it too. The rightful team won the game. There. Cleaned up the mess. All right, coming up next, the Brooklyn Nets have made a bold hire. They have hired Steve Nash to become their next head coach. Why'd they do it? I'll explain. Next in the Herd.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.